The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, just before we get into our main stories, another little addition to the series that Howard and I like to run, which is called Iran Check Your Mezuzahs, because we've got another little unexplained event that took place, this time in an Iranian petrochemical factory on Kark Island. Kark Island is Iran's biggest oil terminal in the Persian Gulf. Apparently, a fire broke out there. The Iranian news agency was reporting it. They claim that the factory was empty of oil and petrochemical products and the fire was contained, but we still don't know what the extent of possible damage to that particular factory is in Kark Island. Also, apparently an explosion aboard an Iranian ship in a Syrian port. Not sure whether this is part of the whole Iranian piracy issue series, ongoing events or not, all a little unexplained. I'm not quite sure whether Iran does need to still check their mezuzahs or not. Maybe some of these can be explained in a more logical sense.
Anthony, interesting developments as far as COVID is concerned in Israel. A court ruling that employers can force employees to be vaccinated or tested before returning to work. I'm sure that has caused an uproar in certain sectors.
Very controversial. I was waiting for Howard to return before we discussed this, because I know that he would very much support this idea. But I think it's something that a lot of us can really understand. This was a precedent-setting ruling that was handed down by a Tel Aviv regional labor court this week, which decided that staff members can be forced, in a sense, to either get vaccinated or to perform corona tests in order to allow them to come back to work. This was part of a case that was brought by an employee of Israel's National Water Company, who have the policy of not allowing workers to come in physically to do their work unless they're either vaccinated or unless they can produce two negative coronavirus tests each week. And the judge said that this policy was a measured policy, according to the words of the judge, in light of the growing rate of COVID-19 infections, and that he suggested to the plaintiff not to continue with this particular case because he would not be successful. And I think that this is really a groundbreaking ruling, even though many companies already have this policy in place. But there were some questions as to their legal basis and whether courts might decide otherwise. A lot of people still deciding not to take up on the vaccination for reasons of their own. Many people don't believe in it, for one reason or another. And the issue of tests is that even though up until now, people in Israel have been able to get tests without having to pay for it, it seems like we might be moving into a new era where tests may well cost money. There is a proposal that tests can cost 52 shekels, which is approximately 250 rand each. You can imagine that if a person is expected to do two of those each week, costs will certainly begin to mount in terms of undertaking those tests. And so, this is, I think, a very significant decision by the Tel Aviv Regional Court. And it comes alongside some research that was recently released by an Israeli hospital, which shows that those patients who are immunosuppressed have been able to build many, many more antibodies from the third vaccine, which is now being rolled out to certain groups of the Israeli population. Apparently, there are more antibodies built in those immunosuppressed patients than was evident after their second vaccination. So it's not only about the fact that after a certain period of time, the antibody levels reduce from your first two vaccinations, but apparently, at least in this particular population group, the third vaccination was responsible for building many, many more antibodies than was evident after their second vaccination. So that seems to be at least one good reason why people should have this booster vaccination, which is now being rolled out in Israel.
And yeah, I think that court decision is going to be important for all of us, wherever we may be. I think they're probably going to use that as precedent. You know, look at what the Israeli courts did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite sure whether the precedent can really be used from one country to another, but that we're certainly seeing influence from one country to another about the way in which treatments are being conducted. And I think that Israel has been very much some sort of a test lab that people can say, well, you know, we managed to reopen our economy and we managed to achieve certain things, having vaccinated a very, very high percentage of the adult population and now rolling it out to children as well. And we've seen other countries around the world follow suit. But I think that the point that we're at now, where we're having to decide about the third vaccination and tracking also the impact of that third vaccination, not only on the immunosuppressed patients, but indeed on the older generation who have now received it and in due course, younger people as well, I think will also be quite influential for the vaccine companies and also for countries in general who have to make decisions about where to from here. I mean, we've seen, you know, the rise of Delta variant infected patients around the world. Numbers are increasing in Israel. The numbers continue to increase. But as I've mentioned on a few occasions, the impact of the vaccine has been clearly felt in spite of that increase in the number of new people being diagnosed with corona at the moment.
Let's move on to this historic trip by Foreign Minister Yair Lapid to Morocco. Apparently the first visit by an Israeli foreign minister in 20 years. I also want to put it to you, Anthony, that I seem to recall during Operation Guardians of the Wall, the Moroccan foreign minister saying some really powerful things against Israel. So this relationship, relatively tenuous in my opinion. Be interested in yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that Arab countries in general, particularly those who are seeking to create diplomatic relations with Israel, find themselves in something of a difficult situation because on the one hand, many of them still want to be associated with things that are going on in the Arab world. You know, let's take Jordan, which seems to have probably the most difficult relationship with Israel. On the one hand, guardian of the holy site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. On the other hand, a peace partner with Israel. The two sometimes do not sit comfortably alongside one another. The King of Jordan from time to time is expected to toe the Arab line. He's expected to criticize Israel. He's expected to make statements and he's expected to take actions, which would seem to be contradictory when considering that they're being taken against a country with whom Jordan has not only a common land border, but also full diplomatic relations and has some level of co-independence upon Israel. So those two things don't often sit comfortably side by side. But I think the direction is fairly clear from Morocco, which is that now that the agreement has been signed, that there is an opening of relations between the two countries today. Foreign Minister Yair Lapid will be off to Rabat. He will officially open the Israeli liaison office in Rabat. He will also meet with his Moroccan counterpart. He will be there today and tomorrow, a special two-day visit. And he will also go to Casablanca in order to spend some time with the local Jewish community. He will, interestingly, be accompanied by the welfare minister, Meir Cohen, who he himself was born in Morocco.
Wow.
And so that's a nice homecoming for Meir Cohen. We remember something similar from David Levy, who then was Israel's foreign minister. I think it was back in 1979, if my memory serves me correctly. Sorry, 1999, not 79, but 1999, when David Levy visited Morocco as foreign minister of Israel and also as someone who came from Morocco. And the last visit by an Israeli foreign minister was made by Silvan Shalom in 2003. And that was after Israel's diplomatic mission had been closed as a result of the outbreak of the second intifada, which then influenced the Moroccan government to close their relationship with Israel down. That was the moment when their relationship with the Arab world became a lot more important than diplomatic relations with Israel. But of course, since the so-called Abraham Accords, since the opening up of things, particularly the agreements with the United Arab Emirates. It's paved the way for Morocco to return back to at least open some level of relations with Israel. We're expecting the Moroccan foreign minister to pay a return visit to Israel. Nasser Bourita, Yair Lapid will meet with him during the course of his visit over the next day or two, but he is expected to be returning to visit Israel in the near future. And it is expected that these visits and, of course, the opening up of the direct air flight route between Israel and Morocco will ultimately lead to full diplomatic relations being restored between Israel and Morocco. Let's hope that that will be the case sooner rather than later.
And Nirach, that takes us to 8 o'clock. Once again, we didn't get through everything we intended to talk about too much again, but thank you. And Howard will be with you tomorrow.
Thanks for holding the fort, guys. Nice to talk to you, and also a good day ahead.
Thank you so much, Anthony. God bless.